For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Yeah, so as I was saying, you know, it's about, we can think about it as dropping reactivity, maintaining a kind of calmness, and a kind of freshness of attitude. And I'll go into those things in a little bit. But, you know, if you look at the other thing I would say about this is, you may have heard Taigen. I don't think I've personally ever heard him elaborate on it, but he often in passing he's made the comment that he I think sometimes says more and more I think that Kshanti patience is you know maybe the most important of these paramitas, and this is echoed in a Indian very important Indo-Tibetan text called the Bodhicaryavatara by Shantideva, where he says it's definitely most important. I should have said, you know, just to, for those of you who are not familiar with this, that, you know, I'll just enumerate some of the other ones. So there are typically said to be six of these virtues or qualities. They are generosity, ethics or moral conduct, this one, Kshanti, patience, energy, enthusiasm, that kind of thing, meditation, jhana, and wisdom. So that kind of gives you the range. But of this particular one, Kshanti, when we look at the, you know, if you look at a text like the Bodhicaryavatara by Shantideva, things like that, you know, say, well, what is this Kshanti? And, you know, typically they list three things. Things like ability to bear the abuse of sentient beings. and we get some of that. Ability to bear the hardships of the path without losing commitment, without losing a willingness to engage. And then the third one is to not be overwhelmed by the profound nature of reality. And I'll speak of a little bit about these in turn. The first one, the ability to bear the abuse of sentient beings. Like in some of these old texts, it's very much like if any of you grew up in the Christian church, you know, Jesus says things like, well, if somebody slaps you in the face, you know, turn the cheek, you know, or if somebody, you know, takes your coat, give them your shirt too. It's the examples from Shantideva are those kinds of things where they really do, you know, what's indicated is a kind of, you know, very overt, being the sort of overt recipient of some kind of mistreatment or abuse. And that's the context we can think about and talk about, but I think it's much more useful for us to think about just the kind of friction and annoyance and botheredness that we can experience in just our normal social engagements. People cutting you off when you're driving, whatever these things, you know, I mean, we all have them, little things and big things that come up and provoke us, trigger our reactivity, facilitate us engaging in behaviors that don't help us or anybody else. You know, so Kshanti, patience, we can think about it as developing habits of response or non-reactivity that don't perpetuate the negative effects of, you know, suffering, we could say, or, you know, don't push us into sort of diminished modes of interaction, sort of based on, you know, defensiveness and anger, whatever they might be. But give us a little ground, a little room to have a more constructive response, something more in keeping with our commitments to Dharma and so on. And I should say, you know, even though oftentimes this is, you know, talked about in terms of putting up with, putting up with, in a sense, that negative twinge, you know, things that other people do that bug us, that we react to. The same could be said, you know, we have to include ourselves in that circle. In other words, I don't know about you folks, I you know, from my perspective, I'm the sort of most annoying person that I interact with on a regular basis, right? And constantly, I see arising in me attitudes, response, judgments, that are, as I say, reactive. They're triggered. They have to do with all kinds of karmic conditioning or whatever, but they're not really what I want my life to be about. So when these things arise, it's very easy to succumb to a kind of anger towards myself. And I'm not saying in any of this is, you know, the practice of patience is not passive. So I'm not saying that, you know, either we give ourselves a free ride or that we, you know, never try to sort out the difficulties that arise in our, you know, social interactions. But that we not be, you know, discouraged by it, you know, so that when we disappoint ourselves, or when other people disappoint us, or anger us, that we take the same attitude of trying to get beyond reactivity, to retain a kind of composure that then will allow us to have a more helpful productive response. It doesn't do me any good to be angry at myself all the time. I mean, it's very good for me to have a sort of a clear understanding of these things that come up that I could be impatient with. But as with other people, there are some responses that are more wholesome and constructive than others. And this idea of Prashanti is about cultivating wholesome response, positive response, helpful response that will tend towards liberation of all beings. So anyway, that's one sort of domain of Prashanti, a very important one. And you know, probably the one we think about the most, and we could talk about the most. I would point out that I think it's really very, very closely related to the paramita I talked about a few weeks ago, generosity. You know, in a sense, generosity or dana is about, you know, non-attachment, right? It's about non-clinging. And, you know, I think in the Buddhist perspective, you know, part of the problem with clinging and attachment is that ultimately it's all rooted in a kind of self-clinging, a kind of commitment and reinforcement to reinforcement of a incorrect and false view of what it is to be a person. Practicing. And as with Dana, this sort of, you know, if it's about countering our tendency towards self-clinging, a sort of letting go, I think we can see that also in Kshanti. You know, I have a certain vision of you know, what my experience is supposed to be when I drive up Lakeshore Drive to come to the temple. It doesn't include people being rude to me on the road. But nonetheless, that'll happen. And, you know, it behooves me to sort of let go of this, you know, sort of be alert to the possibility that the world, the universe, is not all organized around me. Maybe we can talk about this a little more later, part of the way you can do that is by maintaining a sense of calm, maintaining a sense of, you know, a bigger picture. You don't know what's driving that other person. And you know, taking a breath and realizing that sort of running with rather than letting go of any sort of anger that might arise in that situation is not likely to, it's not going to affect the other person, and in fact it doesn't help me. So there's this kind of, for both Donna and Kashanti, there's this very deep sense of letting things go as they go, and sort of at least being skeptical, if not letting go of the idea that, you know, the sort of silly idea that the world is always going to come to me on the terms that I want, because in fact it doesn't do that. You know, this is an important problem. It's an aspect of dukkha, what we call sometimes translated as suffering. You know, which in, as Taigen sometimes says, it's, you know, it's getting what you don't want and not getting what you do. You know, it's that, you know, it's much more than that too, but that kind of says it in a nutshell. So anyway, that's Kashanti talked about in terms of, you know, our relationship to the problems of living in a social world. And I don't mean to neglect, you know, these sort of, you know, I alluded to that thing if somebody takes your cloak, give them your shirt from Jesus, you know, Shantideva. A lot of the literature is full of, you know, how you should respond when people are treating you sort of with overt aggression and abuse. And it's not a negligible issue, but I think for most of us, and I hope for most of us, for most of the time, that's not the world we live in. And we're very fortunate because many, 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 many people in the world do live with that kind of very overt kind of aggression, so on. Okay, so that's one kind. The second thing that I mentioned from Shantideva was, you know, this idea of bearing the hardships of the Bodhisattva path without losing commitment, without losing heart. You know, this is where, you know, I mentioned that in this idea of Kashanti, there were sort of notions of, you know, of courage and confidence, faith, those kinds of things. And this is where this comes in. There are two, and then the third one, not to be overwhelmed by the profound nature of reality. So those kind of taken together might be characterized as being patient with or tolerating the truth, dharma, about oneself and the world more generally. There are two parts of this. One is called Dharma Kashanti. And Dharma Kashanti sort of refers to, you know, in a mature, realistic, and sort of composed way, coming to terms with the way things, you know, actually are. Largely this is cast in terms of recognizing the four truths, specifically, most importantly, the truth of dukkha, the truth of suffering, and ceasing to indulge in fantasies that, you know, somehow dukkha can be sidestepped or abolished that kind of thing, and the sort of fantasy that some sort of ultimate non-relative abiding self can be located and bolstered and so on and so forth. So it's interesting they call this Dharma Kshanti. Kshanti, you know, patience with regard to the Dharma, the truth. And, I mean, what that seems to sort of imply is that, that truth could actually be a little alarming. The truth of dukkha, for example, could be a little bit alarming, could be discouraging. But it need not be. That's maybe part of what practices is coming to see how that is, why that is. The sort of third, or the second part of this two-part truth of, about oneself and the world is a term called Anuttapadika Dharma Kshanti, really kind of a cool word. I like it, you know. This is dharma. This is not dharma in the sense that I just spoke of, where dharma kshanti is toleration, patience, acceptance, acquiescence, receptivity, whatever we can say to the dharma, to the truth, the teachings of Buddha. This one, the dharma, is dharma in the sense of things, phenomena, anupadika dharma kshanti. And what it literally means is acquiescence or receptivity to the non-production of dharmas. Mu, sho, boning, literally, I mean, very literally, mu, no, arising, dharma, patience. But that's a very, very sort of technical term, right, non-production of dharmas. Thay Thein often talks about it in terms of coming to terms with non-graspability, the non-graspability of our inability to sort of, the impossibility of sort of getting a total handle on things. Another way of putting that is these are, we can think of these as synonyms for emptiness. The difficulty of fully understanding, I don't even want to use that word, the sort of great mysteriousness of shunya, of emptiness. Again, you know, the idea seems to be that in the face of non-graspability, in the face of realizing that the world is not under our control, anyway, we want to look at that. One sort of response is to sort of freak out and really lose one's bearings. And, you know, and this is this anupadika dharma kshanti in some, in sort of scenarios where these are seen as, you know, the virtues develop sort of sequentially. This is seen to be sort of a very sort of like one of the final ones where a certain fear or instability can potentially arise in a bodhisattva, in a practitioner, when sort of fully coming to the realization of the implications of emptiness. And again, this sort of feeds back to, you know, an earlier stage of what I was talking about. So Kshanti here is sort of putting up with or dealing with the difficulty of actively, you know, entering to save others, into the world to save others, while residing in the realization that ultimately there are no beings to be saved, there's nobody to save them. You know, yet we have, that's our our declared intention as bodhisattvas, to save all beings. And people talk about this. I mean, a lot of people in this room have, and elsewhere, you know, talk about the sort of feeling and sort of vertigo they sometimes get when they first hear the bodhisattva vow. You know, beings are numberless, I vow to save them all, and they kind of like, you know, it's very, it's disconcerting. But that's our situation. And so, again, there's this idea of sort of maintaining composure and confidence in your effort and the path and continuing on. And this, you know, this sort of thing we could talk about, you know, at this kind of level, we could talk about this as you know, maintaining beginner's mind, sometimes talked about as not knowing mind. The fact that we can't, you know, even though we can't really get a grip on certain aspects of things, that we will, you know, keep moving forward. As Suzuki Roshi says, you know, whether the sun rises in the east or the west, the bodhisattva, you know, walks a straight path. You know, so this is where it opens up. This talk about Kshanti opens up into, you know, notions of, you know, courage, you know, not being discouraged in that sense, faith, confidence, and so on and so forth. By the seeming impossibilities of our vows, by, you know, not being discouraged by the seeming impossibility of our vows and resting the confidence in our path, despite our inability to sort of fully comprehend the nature of what we are engaged in practice. And, you know, despite the constant lack of, you know, apparent lack of encouragement that we're given in our sort of samsaric experience. So, you know, three kinds of kshanti, the kshanti of are how we interact with ourselves and other people, patience with or toleration or acquiescence, receptivity to the truth of the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, and then anupatika dharma kshanti, the coming to terms with acquiescing to taking in the truth of emptiness and the truth of, you know, going back to Dharma Kshanti, I mean, part of the reason that's, you know, they talk about that as something that's necessary, you know, is because that part of the truth of that Dharma sort of, you know, proclaims the truth of non-self. And that could be alarming from the perspective of a seeing self. So, you know, how do we, I said these are practices, how do we cultivate kshanti? You know, I think that in many ways we all have to find our own way, but there are certain things we have recourse to. One, I heard a Galupa, Tibetan monk recently talking about how angry that he had been a very, very angry man for much of his life, to the extent that he alienated his fellow monks and his own family, you know, and he talked about coming to, you know, he was certainly not a, I mean, far from an angry-seeming person when I met him. And, you know, he talked about it in terms of what he called vipassana. Now, this is different than we usually think about it, but what he meant by it quite explicitly was sort of an analytic understanding of the thing that was making him so mad, you know, which basically was that, you know, Mao Zedong didn't even know about him, and he was not going to get his monastery back, and it was undermining his life, you know, and that he just had to let go of his anger. It wasn't helping anything. So we can see that, you know, so taking sort of a bigger picture, the point here is that, you know, when, you know, something aggravates us in our social life, you know, we can sort of, rather than reacting, we can sort of step back and realize, have a little humility and realize that we might not know the whole situation. We may not know you know, what's driving another person's behavior. They may be speeding up and cutting people off on Lakeshore Drives because they're a bona fide jerk. In which case we can try to cultivate a sort of sense of compassion or whatever. Nobody likes to be a jerk, ultimately. Or they may have very good reasons. They may have a sick child in the car. They're trying to get to the hospital. You know, there are things that we don't see. And so we can sort of analytically go at it and sort of realize we never know the whole picture about what's driving other people. And most of the things that bug us are not so... A lot of the things that bug us are not so important anyway. And just let it go. Stay calm. Not react. Not, you know, that kind of thing. You know, I spoke about Abhaya Dana last week as a form of Dana, the gift of fearlessness, which is said to be function of practicing the precepts. Practicing the precepts, we free ourselves from fear and apprehension, and free other people from their fear or apprehension about us. So again, there's this idea of this sort of, you know, letting go allows us to experience or bring forth, you know, patience or toleration, those kinds of things. But finally, the most important one, you know, the most important tool I think that we have for cultivating all of these forms of Kshanti is Zazen itself. You know, part of what happens in Zazen, we sort of tune ourselves to sort of simple, non-coercive attention to things that rise and fall without reacting, without going towards them, without pushing them away. And we just sort of doing that over and over again, rather than sort of instrumentally trying to, you know, make our experience in Zazen confirm some sort of small vision or project about, you know, what my particular small self might be about. I mean, really gives us sort of this moment-to-moment practice in what Dogen talks about as, you know, not carrying ourselves forth, not imposing our sense of how things are supposed to be on the world. You know, this is not, just in closing, I reiterate, it's not, none of this is to say that this is a passive practice. There's nothing in here that says you don't, work for justice. You don't take care of yourself if unjustly attacked or if somebody's inadvertently injuring you. It's none of that. But behind whatever that kind of action or activity might entail, there's this bigger sense of, you know, simply letting the situation be what it is and seeing what it is before trying to do anything about it. I mean, you may choose to act at some point, but you give yourself the space not to react, not to come, let your life be lived out of, you know, all your sort of karmic conditioning triggers and all that kind of thing. So anyway, that's kind of a quick overview on Kshanti. So maybe people have comments or questions? Or... Yeah.
So thank you for your talk.
Welcome.
I was hoping you'd say something about maybe sometimes we feel like we're in abusive relationships and how patience can inform how we with those relationships, or how we, I don't want to say react, but that's the kind of word that's coming up. How we can just just how it can inform the relationship, I guess. Do you know what I'm saying?
How was the last bit?
How patients can inform maybe some of the more difficult or maybe even abusive relationships that we come into contact with.
Well, what were you saying?
Oh, there's a number of ways. But I don't know, I think communication is very useful if it's possible. And I just think maybe some of, I know from my own background, from the Judeo-Christian background, sometimes I think self-sacrifice is leaned on a bit too much and not clarified enough for me. So I think it's very, just think it's very important to try to communicate and be aware that the liberation of all beings is of utmost importance, but you're not excluded from that.
Exactly, that's a hugely important point. Yeah, that's why I'm a little bit, some of this Indo-Tibetan stuff, like Bodhicharya. Am I saying that? Bodhisattva Charya. I have a little bit of skepticism about that because they're full of these things like, well, if somebody beats you to smithereens, you should be thankful because, they're working out their bad karma and they're freeing you from your attachment to your body or something. I can sort of see, like, there's a really profound sense in which everything is grist for the mill of practice, including if somebody, if you are the recipient of abuse, there can be a dharmic response to that and a non-dharmic response to that. But in my view, neither one of those, the dharmic or the non-dharmic response, should include staying in an abusive situation. And this has to do with your point, saving all beings. Includes taking care of yourself, but it also sort of putting up with sort of overtly destructive and damaging behavior at the hands of someone else, you're not doing them any good either. Alex, then the fellow in the corner of the nation.
I was just going to add to that. From my own experience, I was born into a very emotionally reactive family environment, and it's taken a long time. Definitely, it's not a passive practice. I think when I was younger, it was a passive thing. Things are getting really emotionally reactive here. I'm just going to, step out. And as I've gotten more deeper into my practice here. I found that that is one response. There's other responses I've been able to bring to those situations now, it's much more. That's one response, but a non-passive response too is really standing there in the midst of this and not reacting. And there's one response, and about another response too is also being able to calmly interact with these emotionally reactive people. In a way that is true to you and also true to the situation and not adding to kind of the negative energy that's going on. From the Zazen, it's been very helpful in that regard to allowing me to function in that environment better.
Yeah. No, I would think, going responding to that and to Jared's thing, the one of the most difficult sort of arenas in which to practice Kshanti would be, so if somebody does some anonymous guy on Lakeshore Drive misbehaves, that's one thing, but when you're in a relationship with people, like in a close relationship, a family relationship with whatever, there get to be, certain patterns of, not only do certain things, can you find certain things provocative, but sometimes those are can be deployed, right? Somebody can kind of they know, this idea of pushing buttons. Sometimes people know what buttons to push, they know how to do it, and you're probably doing it too, and finding a way to sort of give some space so that you can, rather than, just indulge in that and get nowhere, to sort of positively work with it. can be very challenging, and sometimes it needs, you know, oftentimes it needs the help of other people, you know, in the form of therapists and that kind of thing. Sometimes not.
I like this idea of composure. This what I that's what originally attracted me to Buddhism, was just seeing people who had the composure that had come from years of meditating. And, you know, about abusive relationships, I definitely, this is really relevant just because, like, problems at work with people who are basically kind of bullies, right? And there's a strategy to what people like that do, where they expect to be able to push buttons and get a response, and I have a choice about whether I want to react to that or maintain composure. And if you're in that kind of situation, you know, and you're trying to stand up for yourself, it's usually more effective to maintain composure and just keep trying to make your point on its own merits than to engage and get defensive and angry, which is kind of what they're coming on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these patterns tend to be self-perpetuating. It's like, you know, you react, I react, you react, I react. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, married couples who could sort of sit in separate rooms and write out, you know, this is the scenario of how our arguments go, right? I mean, and, you know, or in a work situation, you know, but this idea of sort of like taking a sort of stepping back and maintaining composure, you know, at least allows the possibility of you know, coming up with a different response, not a reactive response, but a different response that may kind of open things up and you know, undo the knot a little bit. And some of them, you know, sometimes we just have to, certain kinds of tangles, we just wind up having to, you know, they continue for our whole life, you know.
Thank you. Well, I was going to comment on that too. I, in kind of the closing stages of a difficult work situation, but I've definitely been in relationships that, in which I, you know, came to feel that I was being abused and was in the past. And, you know, I think one of the most difficult things is that if you are practicing and looking at yourself, there's, what, in my experience, this may not be universally true, but there's a kernel of truth in what, you know, someone is saying and about something that I did that set them off, but the reaction is so out of proportion that it really becomes abusive, and it's not possible to, you know, and it's being directed entirely at you, and I think that's what the abusive part is. And I think that's what's so important to me about practice, is it gives me a place in which to, you know, just quietly sort out. And sometimes that takes a long time. You know, okay, how have I contributed to this? And you know, what's going on here? And I think in those situations, I have come to the conclusion that, you know, I don't deserve what I'm getting out of it. And, you know, so then having the courage to sort of forgive yourself and also try to apologize for your part in it, but then, you know, protect yourself by whatever, you know, leaving if you have to. And I think one of the most powerful things that ever happened to me in that respect was leaving a relationship in which that became the dynamic, and then running into the person on the street 8 years later and having them say, you know, I want to tell you I'm so sorry about all that stuff I put on you. You didn't deserve that. That was what was going on in my life at the time. And it really, beyond, you know, it just gave me the perspective of there's so much more. You know, we're all operating with our own karmic situations that are, you know, and there's nothing you can do, really, you know, beyond a certain point about that. And maybe that's the Anapatmika Dharma Kshanti, is just accepting that this is just not going to work right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not that I'm so right and they're so wrong. It's just like, whoa, this is not going to work and it's not good for me. And I got to find some way to take care of myself and forgive myself.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, and also, I mean, this thing of this sort of process of sort of sitting with and trying to be open to, well, what is my part in this difficult situation? Also brings with it the, you know, the possibility of being, you know, sort of curious as to, well, what, you know, what's driving that other person? Or at least, you know, I mean, you may never know, but, you know, at least being open to the possibility that, you know, that other person has got their sort of karmic stuff too, and it, you know, it might, you know, whatever the behavior is, it's coming out of some place, and it's probably not something good. It's probably some damage that that person has sustained somewhere along the line. So it opens up at least to also the possibility of having a little bit of, if not clear understanding, sort of understanding the sense of compassion, or maybe a degree of forgiveness, which, you know, again, allows us to just kind of just create space.
It doesn't mean that we can always save that other person or save the relationship.
You may not be able to fix anything.
Yeah.
Or it's pretty, you know, certainly not another person.
But maybe at least not do any more harm.
Not do any more harm, because you can realize, okay, yeah, this is really awful, but I do not need to, you know, bring an extra degree of anger. Yeah. I don't need to badmouth that person. One over here in the corner, and then
I just want to thank everyone for their shared wisdom. The one thing I think about as I study the paramitas is that they probably can't be looked at separately.
I agree.
And so as we practice, we've got to be able to recognize that sometimes we have to negotiate these paramitas. And so going back to what Jeremy had, you know, initially introduced, it seems as if in an abusive relationship, you certainly can practice patience in the way that people are talking about it, which I believe it sounds like really patience with your communication. So that requires reflection, composure. Wow, that's a lot of patience that you're going to have to draw upon. And then, you know, with what you were just talking about, Nancy, the reflection on how is, like, how am I part of this, and then how to respond, that's all patience. But then at some point, you might have to jump over to the paramita of generosity we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And I think it was Jeremy that even brought up the factor of, you know, you've got to be kind to yourself and generous to yourself, and then that's when you, you know, it's time to exit this particular type of relationship. So it's that, you know, blending of the paramitas that are going to help you practice in a beneficial way.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. I agree with you. I think the, you know, there's, you know, the paramitas are not just sort of these, you know, well, we've got one here, we've got here, we're kind of sticking together and make a list. They've got really, they're internally related. They imply each other. And, you know, as I tried to make the point with generosity and patience, likewise, I think patience sort of of this kind implies also, you know, sort of energy, which I'm going to talk about next time. You know, this sort of the sense of not, you know, giving up, but sort of staying, you know, and not withdrawing, but sort of staying in the situation. And I don't mean staying with the situation in the sense of like staying in a bad sort of, you know, relationship or whatever, but not, you know, keeping confident that, you know, there's something about our situations as human beings that are tractable. We can work with them in positive ways, no matter how negatively they present themselves to us. You know.
I was just going to share, because I also come from a family that's very emotionally explosive sometimes, and I'm the youngest, I think, and a lot of times that really plays into my life, just because I think I did spend a number of years going to people looking for validation about my decisions. And, you know, ultimately, since I pull away from it as I get older and I'm making my own decisions on my own without anyone's input, because, you know, I have to deal with the consequences of those decisions, people are upset with me. They're mad about it. They want me to be coming to them and getting that validation. And when I'm not, they're hurt.
Mm.
But, so, you know, I do have my family members that come to me in an angry way about these abnormal things. So, you know, I just wanted to share, like, I try to confront it and not have it go to an explosive place. And, you know, one thing that's helped me, and it's just one phrase, you know, my sister said something to me, and I'm like, you know, I'm not in charge of your expectations. Mm-hmm. And that was a very powerful thing for me, and it's something that stuck with me, and I'm hopefully maybe able to know.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Yeah.